Hello, good morning, and welcome to Studies Through the Bible with Pastor Zach Ebarb. I am Pastor Zach Ebarb, and this lovely morning, Monday morning at 8 o'clock, we are going to be continuing our overviews of books of the Bible. Last week, we covered 1 and 2 Kings, and we talked about how 1 and 2 Kings is written to cover the political history of Israel, except with an emphasis on the spiritual decisions that result in the political things that occur under the reigns of not only David, but Solomon, Jeroboam, Rehoboam, and all of these. As well as we talked about the divided kingdom, then how the northern kingdom fell, and then later the southern kingdom. And we highlighted a lot of the kings that came into power during that time and what their spiritual conditions were. And so we're kind of piggybacking off of the idea from the last 2 weeks of the books that were, well, last 3 weeks of books that we've covered when we get to 1 and 2 Chronicles. What's very interesting about 1 and 2 Chronicles is, again, like 1, 2 Samuel, and 1 and 2 Kings, it was originally one book, okay? And it's going to highlight the same periods of history that we have covered in 1, 2 Samuel and 1 and 2 Kings, but it's going to do it in a much different way. It's going to have a different perspective than the other ones did, as well as it's going to be centered around some different occurrences that we don't see happen in 1 2 Samuel and 1 and 2 Kings. So first of all, let's talk about why is it 1 and 2 Chronicles? Why is it not one book? Again, it was broken into two books when the Septuagint was translated. For those people to think that the only translation in the world that exists is one specific translation, typically the one that you like, I got news for you, you're wrong. The Bible has been modified many different times, not doctrinally, not from an idea standpoint, it is still reliable, but it's been modified and changed in ways for organization, as well as it's been translated into multiple languages. So when the Septuagint was being translated, they decided to break 1 Chronicles, the book of Chronicles, into 1 and 2 Chronicles. And the name that we get for this book actually comes from the Vulgate, when Jerome coined it as Chronicorum Liber, which means the chronicles of the whole of sacred history. So we've had some changes in organization here, but what the idea of the name is, what we're trying to get across to you with Chronicles, is that we are going to be covering historical occurrences for the nation. When you have someone who is a chronicler, okay, or a writer of Chronicles, it means that they record events and stories that happen throughout the history of a specific nation or maybe a person, whatever the case may be. And so when we're going into this, automatically we know we're still talking about history. However, our authorship changes a little bit. We cannot talk directly and say that we know who the writer of Chronicles is. And from this point forward, I'm going to refer to 1 and 2 Chronicles as Chronicles. I will give you two different overviews of both books, but really it makes sense for both books to come back together as one book for studying purposes, since they are hand in hand and they piggyback off of one another. But so when we're talking about who wrote Chronicles, as in 1 and 2, we cannot pin down the exact authorship. Tradition attributes it to Ezra, which there's a lot of evidence that could say that that is true, okay? Despite that, though, most of the time, people refer to the author of Chronicles as the chronicler, okay? Even the Jewish people will say the chronicler wrote, okay? I would tell you it's a very safe bet that it was Ezra. excuse me. The reason for that is that the final verses of 2 Chronicles is the opening verses of Ezra. So it would make sense that if Ezra had wrote Chronicles and, of course, his own book, then he would not have used the same verses written in another book unless he himself wrote it and was giving a continuation of that flow of thought. A lot of people also think Ezra was responsible for the writing of Nehemiah. But we'll get to that later on as we are working our way through the Bible. So, on authorship, Ezra or the chronicler, whichever one you want to go with. I think probably more than likely Ezra, but it's not going to make a difference in the doctrine and the audience of our book, okay? So let's talk about time, all right? Chronicles covers more time than any other book in the Bible, okay? There is no other work in Scripture that covers the amount of time that Chronicles does. Now, I know what you're thinking. Now, Brother Zach Ebar, you just said that this covers the same history as 2 Samuel into 1 and 2 Kings. Yes, it does. However, our author is going to be very focused on the temple and the Davidic line. Okay, this is going to be written from a priestly perspective. And because of that, we are going to go all the way back to Adam in the beginning of the 1 Chronicles, okay? So when we're looking at this, we're covering a vast amount of time, but the majority of the time that we're going to be looking at is that we're going to be covering somewhere around the standpoint of post-exile times, okay? They're going to mention the generations following Zerubbabel. We're even going to be talking about Persian coins. So all of this is written around obviously post-exile time, more than likely around 5th century BC. And it's going to cover genealogies from Adam all the way down to David, and then, from David through the downfall of the Davidic dynasty under Solomon all the way to the exile of the southern kingdom, okay? So we're covering thousands of years, but eventually we're going to reach a point in 1 Chronicles where we only cover about 33 years. We're getting into the reigns of kings by this point. So our theme and literary structure, obviously this is what? Historical narrative, right? We're covering a lot of history. However, these books are written to the returned remnant who were going to rebuild Jerusalem after the 70-year Babylonian captivity, okay? So what the focus is going to be is if our audience is this group of Jews who've never seen Israel, they are returning back home, they're trying to fix what their parents messed up, and they get to there, what is going to be the most important lesson? What do you think we should be teaching a group of Jews who have never been in Jerusalem, who have been living in an idolatrous nation, and are now returning to try to build their homeland? Well, we should teach them to not do what their parents did that resulted in the captivity, right? So the goal of this book is it's written from a priestly perspective to get across the theme and the idea of following God, worshiping God, how God is the center of the nation. And when that center is removed, the nation falls into chaos. Okay? So these exiles, they are originally from Judah. They are returning to Judah. And they're going to try to fix what has happened. And so our writer, our chronicler, is going to give them a history lesson all the way from the patriarchal beginnings to where they are now. And so we have this priestly perspective. We're going to be focusing on worship and how worship influences the people and what it can do, and the fact that the temple itself is what unifies Jerusalem. They're going to make sure to highlight very, very much the concept of worship and the rebuilding of the temple and the original building of the temple. And then, of course, I've already told you, we're going to talk about the Davidic line, right? we're going to have to look at from a priestly perspective, not just a prophetic one like we've already looked at in 1 and 2 Kings, but a priestly perspective on David's actions, these actions were a result of this sin or this problem that was a result of not maintaining worship with God, okay? It's this ever-building concept of everything that came to be for the nation of Israel was because men were not doing what they were supposed to be doing. So to kind of give you an idea, Samuel into Kings. Whew, excuse me, I don't know what my deal is today. Samuel into Kings is a prophetic perspective. It's going to cover a lot of political history, how spiritual things impacted political things. Wars are prominent. There's going to be a record of both nations, continuing history of the nation, and it's going to cover men's failure. All right, that was Samuel through Kings, right? We talked about that. Let me give you the side-by-side of Chronicles. Chronicles is from a priestly perspective. It's going to cover more religious history. Remember, 1 and 2 Kings is political history with an emphasis on how spiritual things impacted political history, okay? Absalom coming to power and throwing David off the throne in the 2 Samuel was a result of David's sin, okay? That's what we're focused on. How your spiritual life affected political life, okay? This one, we're going to be talking about how spiritual lives impacted religious history, okay? So, and then, of course, we're not going to be talking about war very much. We're going to be talking about the temple and how it was built, and then how it was added on to, rebuilt, fixed, restored, all these things throughout the history of the people. It is going to focus pretty much entirely on Judah. Now, I know what you're thinking. Why is that? When Jeroboam went to the northern kingdom, I'm going to kind of give you a bone here to help you understand. When Jeroboam took over the northern kingdom after rebelling against the rule of Rehoboam, Solomon's son, they refused to worship at the temple in Jerusalem and established a temple on their southern and northern border to keep Israelite people or the nation of Israel separate from the nation of Judah, because of the fact the temple is the unifying factor of this nation. The same way Jesus Christ is the center of the church, and if you take that out, the church will fall into chaos. The temple is, and worship to God is the center of Jerusalem society. It's what held Judah and Israel together all these years. And so by removing that and giving two other optional temples, which wasn't scripturally true, but it doesn't matter, now we have a fully divided kingdom, and so Chronicles is kind of like, well, the Davidic line's not in the northern kingdom, the temple's not in the northern kingdom, so we're going to be talking about the southern kingdom, okay? That's kind of the concept. They get thrown to the side because they have separated from the worship at the temple, as well as Jeroboam is not of the Davidic line. He is a rebellion king that... he's a bad guy, but at the same time, Americans might identify with him because he rebelled for the same reasons Americans rebelled against the British in 1776. Okay, so we'll get to that, though, when we're digging into 1 and 2 Kings. But so we have these vast differences there. Also, it's going to talk about not the history of the nation, but the continuity of David's line. That's very important. And it's going to talk about God's faithfulness as opposed to men's failures. Okay? So, 1 Chronicles at a glance. What's going to happen? Chapters 1 through 10. Genealogy of David and Israel, starting at Adam. Okay? It's only going to be about genealogy and ancestry. 10 whole chapters of our chronicler reminding the people, this is what you come from, okay? The location, all of this takes place in Israel. And when I say it takes place in Israel, I mean that it was written in Israel, okay? They obviously weren't around at the time of Adam when they wrote these scriptures, okay? And of course, our timeline is thousands of years of history. thousands, okay? I'm not even going to try to pin it down for you. It starts all the way at Adam, and it's going to end at the exile, okay? That's a lot of time, all right? However, by chapters 10 through 13, we have gotten into history that you know very well. The ascension of David as king, okay? We're going to talk about King David coming to the throne. Throughout the rest of this, we're going to talk about history and activity, meaning things that happen, decisions people make, this kind of thing. And it covers 33 years of time. So we see that 13 through 18, the acquisition of the ark. We know about that. You know, the Philistines took the ark in battle a few times, and then they got left at a Levite man's house, and he was getting blessed, and David tried to move it on a cart, and the guy got killed, and so this big, huge mess, and then David finally moves it again. All that stuff we're going to talk about. Acquisition of the ark. 18 through 21 is David's victories, okay? His moving forward and taking care of things and doing right as a king. 21 through 28, preparation for the temple. Remember, God said he couldn't build it, but that didn't mean he couldn't what? Prepare for it. So he starts getting the materials ready for his son Solomon to build the temple. And then, of course, 28 through 29 are the last days of David, okay? David's death and moving on, all right? So that's First Chronicles. Big, huge thing about genealogy, and then a very quick, in my opinion, very quick summarization of the life of David centered around the temple and worship, okay? And so from there, we, and of course, like I said, we'll talk about improper transportation of the ark, prosperity of David's reign, proper transportation of the ark, when he realizes that that old boy is getting blessed and he's not. celebration of the ark coming back. And then, of course, the institution of the Davidic covenant, which is between David and God. Okay, so we see all of these things start coming together. People that are being put in charge of getting the getting ready to build the temple, all this stuff. Then we have our second half of Chronicles, right? Act 2. This covers a whole lot of time. The first half is going to cover, well, I say first half, probably more the first third, covers 40 years of time following the end of David. And then the last two-thirds covers 393 years of Israelite history. So, when we get there, we're going to start with the reign of Solomon, okay? So, chapters 1 through 2 is the inauguration of Solomon. All of this is going to be centered around the temple being constructed and the splendor of this temple, okay? Takes place in Judah. Israel's gone. After David dies, after Solomon dies, what happens to the kingdom? It's divided. Now, I know what you're saying. Well, why are you saying that this all takes place in Judah, Mr. Zach? You just said that if the kingdom's not divided until under Solomon, after Solomon's dead and Rehoboam comes to power, why are you saying this takes place in Judah? Well, because Jerusalem is in Judah, okay? So everything that's going to happen from this point happens in the southern kingdom, even though it's not yet divided into the southern kingdom, okay? So, inauguration of Solomon, chapter 1 to 2. 2 to 8 is the completion of the temple. 8 to 10 is the glory of Solomon's reign. Okay, things are all going really good. Then 10 through 14 is the division of the kingdom, the Rehoboam-Jeroboam thing we talked about. 14 through 36 is the reforms under Asa, Jehoshaphat, Joash, Hezekiah, and Josiah. Okay, and then chapter 36 to the end of chapter 36 is the fall of Judah, okay? The temple gets destroyed. There's all this reconstruction and things we try to do. The nation is in a disaster. Even though some good things happen during this time, I don't want to give you this bad thought over what happens in 2 Chronicles. It's just that you can see the nation of Israel, after David starts to fall away and his life doesn't end so grand, And Solomon comes back and boom, we've got this revival. We're focused on, and then he starts to kind of fall away. We never quite recover from that fall away. All right. We have some decent men that come to power, but they all end up about in the same boat of falling away, falling away, falling away, falling away. The power or the money, whatever you want to say, goes to their head, and it results in these falling aways, okay? And so, but I want to kind of give you some, you know, some good sides to it. Rehoboam comes, the kingdom is divided, however, Judah is strengthened, but then we have that falling away I talked about, right? So Judah is weakened, Rehoboam dies. Then Abijah comes to power, and he goes to war with Jeroboam in the north, and then he dies. Okay, there's not much talked about him other than he goes to war, he dies, okay? Asa comes to power, and he does some pretty good things. He gets victory over the Ethiopians. He gives an exhortation of Azariah. He does all kinds of reforms. Eventually, he has victory over the Syrians, but then he kind of has a oopsie and rebukes Hanani, which is a prophet, and a prophet who tried to warn him. And, of course, then Asa dies. In fact, Hanani, when he is there, let me find real quick, he goes to tell, he condemns Asa for relying on Syrians. So there's victory over the Syrians, and then Asa tries to use the Syrians. And, yeah, he throws Hanani in prison, okay, for telling him what God wanted him to tell him. This is also going to begin the time of history really roughing up prophets, okay? Prophets get a lot of grief, a lot of bad raps, a lot of bad things happen to them by this course in Israel's history. So we see all that. So Asa, he does some good things, but he also does some bad things, that falling away, as I call it. Then we have Jehoshaphat. He comes in. He gets instruction by the priests and the Levites. He expands the kingdom. He makes an alliance with Ahab, which we remember Ahab, right? Old dude in the north, okay? He organizes the kingdom. He has victory over Moab and Ammon, which is fantastic. There's a summarization of his reign, and then, of course, he commits a great sin, and he dies, as I said before. Comes to power, things go good, falling away. Reign of Jehoram. So Jehoram will come to power. We're going to see Edom and Libnah revolt. We're going to see Elijah warn Jehoram. And then we have the invasion of Philistia and Arabia. And then, of course, Jehoram dies. Then we have Ahaziah and Athaliah. Okay, that very short things. Kind of just da-da-da-da-da, here they were, they died. Okay. Then we have Joash who comes to power. And when Joash comes, we see a revival in Jehoiada. We see Joash come to power. The temple gets repaired after all these wars and things happen. Then, of course, Jehoiada dies. And then there is the murder of his son. And then there's the destruction of Judah by Syria. And then Joash dies. Okay, and there's a lot of things that go into that. I'm just kind of giving you an overview of what happens. And then Amaziah will come to power, and he has victory over Edom, but he has an idolatry problem, and then Judah gets defeated by Israel, and then, of course, he dies. And then Uzziah, comes to power. He has all kinds of victories, and then there's this falling away. He does a sinful offering, and he dies. Okay? Jotham, he gets 9 verses, and then he's off the scene. There's not much to talk about with him. Then we have the reign of Ahaz. He gets defeated. He commits idolatry. He dies. Okay? Hezekiah. Now, everybody knows Hezekiah, right? He does an all right. There's some reformation under Hezekiah. But then Assyria starts to invade because he did some things he ought not to have done. I'm jumping ahead a little bit. Assyria tries to invade. He prays. God takes care of Assyria, okay? Then Hezekiah starts to restore things, tries to get the temple and all this fixed back up. he amasses great wealth, almost as good as in the times of David and Solomon, and he gets arrogant and shows it off, and he dies, okay? Ends up almost losing the kingdom. Manasseh comes to power, nasty dude, but we don't talk about him very much. In fact, we'll talk about him for 19 verses. Amen. And then we get to Josiah, and we want to talk about Josiah a little bit more. He does some early reforms. He repairs the temple. He finds the law, okay? The law that was lost, he actually finds it. And then he learns about the Passover, and for the first time and forever, Israel celebrates the Passover. So there's some good things that happens under Josiah, and then he dies, okay? And Jehoahaz, Jehoiakim, Jehoiakim, we talk about them, but just kind of flip it, like this guy came, this guy came, this guy came, let's get to the meat, okay? Then we have Zedekiah, and Zedekiah is not such a good guy. As you know, Zedekiah is the one who did what? Threw Jeremiah in prison, right? He did not like Jeremiah. Jeremiah did not really like him, I'm pretty sure. And so he comes to power, and then he dies, and of course his decisions ultimately lead Israel to falling under Persian control, Babylonian control under Cyrus, because our book ends with the proclamation by Cyrus to return to Jerusalem, okay? So we cover a whole lot of history, a whole lot of time. We're going to talk a lot, obviously, about the temple, how it was destroyed, how it was restored, how it was destroyed, how it was restored, how it was destroyed, how it was restored, and then eventually how it was destroyed, the people were taken, and now they're returning to try to restore it all once again, okay? And we're going to talk about the importance of God as the center of these people's lives. And when they remove worship and the temple from being an important aspect of their lives, it leads to chaos and destruction in their nation. The same things happen today in our own country. You know, when we have this amassing of sin and a lack of care for the church and what needs to occur with church, we start to have these same principles begin to come into play. They kind of give you an overview of temple history real quick. Obviously, Solomon originally built the temple, right? By 960 BC, it's the most glorious form of the temple there has ever been. And then, of course, it gets destroyed by the Babylonians when they capture Jerusalem in 586 BC. Cyrus, though, of course, allows them to go back and rebuild it with Zerubbabel, okay? And that's completed in 515, and it's not much to talk about. It's not very, I guess you would say, in full splendor. But, of course, Zerubbabel's job, or his want, was to just get it built. Okay, get it back to being there for the people to worship. And so it was completed by 515, of course, by the urging of the prophets Haggai and Zechariah. Zechariah, right? Everybody says Zechariah. It's Zechariah. And then several centuries later, Herod the Great comes to power. We have Roman rule over Palestine. And he orders construction of a third temple, basically trying to make friends with all the Jews, okay? It's relatively ornate, kind of pretty, cream-colored, lots of gold. He does it to try, again, to appease the Jewish people. And, well, things don't really go all that well because Jesus eventually prophesied that about 40 years after his resurrection and ascension, in AD 70, it would be destroyed. Solomon's temple had an inner and outer courtyard. It was just massive. It was gorgeous. Very well done. But the temple just never returns to its splendor after Solomon. And I think that's a very important lesson here, is that we have Solomon come to power, and he's on fire for God. And he does all of these things that he's supposed to do. He helps in getting this temple built and all this great stuff. However, when he starts to fall away into sin, the nation falls away with him. And guys, once you have that sin falling, it's very hard to get back out of that hole, okay? And that's just for you on an individual basis. It's even harder for a group of people who have been following this leader down the rabbit hole. And now the leader goes, oh my goodness, what have we been doing? What have I done? We need to go back up. And they're like, but wait a minute, we kind of like the hole, okay? So for pastors, teachers, leaders of nations, whatever, it is so important that the leadership maintains a good standing with God and make sure to remove themselves from sin, lest they cause all to stumble. Because the nation of Israel, even though they get some decent leaders back in who try to restore things back, try to get things back to being what it's supposed to be, they too end up falling away, and the nation just falls a little further and a little further and a little further and a little further and a little further before you know it, where we have Herod the Great, who's not a Christian, who doesn't care about God, who's literally just trying to get the Jews to shut up. He's the guy that's rebuilding the temple. Somebody that doesn't even care about it. Somebody that doesn't find it important. Somebody that just sees it as a symbol and a way to control people is the one who is building God's house. And it doesn't take very long for a church to end up in such dire straits, or a nation, or anything that a leader is present in. So when you are thinking about your decisions and your sin, you need to think about not only what it's going to do to your own life if you commit it, but what it will do to the lives of others and how you could negatively impact and lead somebody in an incorrect direction. So that is 1st and 2nd Chronicles. Obviously, remember, priestly perspective focused on David's line, the temple, and the worship of God in Israel, and how that changes based on leaders and things of this nature. And what happens to the temple. Also, definitely remember, this is trying to capture the religious history of the people, not the political history and how it was impacted by spiritual conditions. Okay? And of course, it's going to highlight God's faithfulness, God's grace, God's success over men's failures, which we see in Samuel, 1st and 2nd Kings. So make sure to keep all those things straight. Remember, Chronicles was originally one book, but 1st and 2nd Chronicles. 1st Chronicles, we cover thousands of years of time, then 33 years of David's rulership while he's in Jerusalem, okay, in Judah, because remember, the first 7 years of his 40 years was in Hebron. And then, of course, we have 2nd Chronicles, which is going to cover 40 years of time under Solomon's reign, okay, and then jumps into 393 years of history under all of the kings that follow Solomon, and then eventually the Babylonian captivity, and then Cyrus' proclamation for them to return to build the temple in the city again. He releases them to go back and worship their God. The Persians, surprisingly enough, were a, I guess we would call it tolerant people today. They were fine with allowing people to worship their own gods as long as they paid their taxes. Okay, so that's 1st and 2nd Chronicles in a nutshell. I hope you have enjoyed it. Hope you learned something. As always, I am Pastor Zach Ebar. This has been Studies Through the Bible with Brother Zach. Make sure to get out of here, go open up your Bible, and get studying.